You're listening to District Sentinel Radio. This is your nightly newscast featuring reporting from the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight.
Check out our website, districtsentinel.com, for some of the latest news coming out of the nation's capital.
And check out our Patreon to subscribe to our weekly podcast, The Sentinel Cast. It comes out every Friday. Or subscribe on Patreon for other goodies, including t-shirts. Or just chuck us $2 a month to help keep this project going.
I think we've settled on a musical theme over here for our nightly newscast. Special thanks to Adam Fligston, who created it. Check out his website at adamfligston.com. Anyway, it's Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. What happened today?
Well, Betsy DeVos's nomination passed the Senate, but it wasn't easy for the next education secretary.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the nomination is confirmed.
What you just heard was Mike Pence casting a tiebreaker for a cabinet nominee for the first time in U.S. history.
As you referred to it on Twitter, let's call up our creepy-ass vice president now.
Yeah. He was already in the building, apparently. He was ready for the 50-50, so we didn't even need to call him up. He was just there. DeVos went down to the wire after senators reported receiving tens of thousands of phone calls and other forms of communication in opposition to her nomination. In the wake of her confirmation hearing, DeVos was widely panned for being unable to answer basic questions about federal policy and for claiming guns were needed at schools to protect them from, quote, grizzlies. We need Second Amendment, we need guns to protect our nation's schools' picnic baskets. Something that isn't even true, by the way. A grizzly could take down your average school teacher with a gun. You need bear spray. DeVos was also widely criticized for having no experience in education or education policy making. Her experience consists of bankrolling lobbying for more money for private charter and religious schools at the expense of public education, quote, school choice. DeVos, like Trump, is also a billionaire who was born into wealth, we should note. She's using some of that inherited wealth to change public education policies, or has tried to from the outside, and now she'll get an inside shot at it. Between her confirmation hearing and Tuesday's vote, senators reported, as I noted, receiving tens of thousands of calls in opposition to DeVos, compared with relatively few in favor of the fundamentalist billionaire. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, one of two Republicans to help force the tiebreaker, said that constituent outreach influenced her decision to vote no. The other Republican no, by the way, was Maine's Susan Collins. In other news, Rand Paul is hitting out at news that Donald Trump is considering naming Elliot Abrams to the number two spot at the State Department.
This is our broken clock news update.
Yeah. Paul posted an op-ed to the libertarian website Rare, blasting Abrams as a true believer in the Bush doctrine, having served under the younger Bush and in the Reagan administration.
I think that's the website that Paul is just friends with the guy who started it and occasionally pens op-eds for him.
Well, this is what he wrote on Abrams, quote, Elliot Abrams is a neoconservative too long in the tooth to change his spots. And the president should have no reason to trust that he would carry out a Trump agenda rather than a neocon agenda. Not that a Trump agenda would necessarily be that great, just for the record. But just as importantly, the senator added, Congress has good reason not to trust him. He was convicted of lying to Congress in his previous job. In 1991, Abrams pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor counts of lying to Congress for his role in the Iran-Contra cover-up. From the New York Times story on the plea, Abrams, quote, admitted that he had unlawfully kept information from two congressional committees in the fall of 1986 when he testified about his knowledge of the secret Contra supply network and about his role in soliciting a $10 million contribution for the Contras from the Sultan of Brunei. So if he gets the nomination, and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson reportedly wants him to, per The Hill, Abrams can only afford two more Republican no's. Trump, Tillerson, and Abrams are scheduled to meet today at the White House. Something that might weigh heavily on Trump's mind, however, too, as Senator Paul noted in his op-ed, during the campaign, Abrams said of the now president, quote, the chair in which Washington and Lincoln sat, he is not fit to sit. You're not wrong about that one, Elliot, you death squad fuckboy.
Yeah.
But still, you know, like, that's a pretty big diss for Trump. I'm not sure.
I know. I'm sure he won't take that very well.
Right,
I
mean, right.
He tends not to.
Yeah.
Mr. Abrams, if you'd like to respond to Sam Knight calling you a death squad fuckboy, call into our rant line at some point.
Yeah.
We'll announce the number later on the show. So you have to listen to the end of the show, Elliot. Moving on. Also on Capitol Hill, on the House side, the new Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security just appeared before the House Committee of Jurisdiction and floated this creepy idea, making all foreign travelers to the U.S. give up their social media passwords. Here he was being asked about the issue by Congressman Clay Higgins, who I believe is making his first appearance on any of the District Sentinel platforms. I didn't even know Congressman Clay Higgins existed until now. I'm just going to play the whole exchange here because it's probably a big deal.
Those guys are on social media. I would hope that under your leadership, your department will increase its efforts to dig into that available data.
Certainly great points on the social media thing. Again, it's still a work in progress, but this pause is giving us an opportunity. Well, it's not quite a pause anymore since we're under court order to allow people to continue. But even if we don't get out from under the court order, we're looking at some enhanced or some additional screening. I think I mentioned them a little earlier. You know, if someone comes in and wants to come into our country, we want to say, for instance, what websites do you visit, and give us your passwords so that we can see what they do on the internet. And, you know, this might be a week, might be a month. They may wait some time for us to vet. If they don't want to give us that information, then they don't come. We may look at we want to get on their social media with passwords. What do you do? What do you say? If they don't want to, you know, cooperate, then they don't come in. And if they truly want to come to America, they'll cooperate. If not, you know, next in line.
If they truly want to come to America, they'll give us their passwords. If not, next in line.
That's pretty astonishing. You watched the hearing, not me. It sounded like people were gasping.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was talking in response to a congressman who was favorable of this idea and prodding it. And
right,
towards the end of the hearing, and most of the Democrats had left. There were just a few people lingering around who hadn't asked a question. So he actually had a pretty sympathetic audience at the time. Kelly was careful to say that this isn't official policy yet, that this is just stuff that they're thinking about. But I'm pretty sure he'll have a willing partner in Donald Trump on this. And it should be noted that a much lighter version of this policy was already put in place under the Obama administration. At the end of December last year, the DHS began asking individuals coming to the U.S. under the visa waiver program, visitors mostly from European nations, buddies of the U.S., to list their social media accounts. Now, the program did not involve requiring individuals to give up their personal passwords. It was also optional, although officials never clarified if refusing to provide the particular data would negatively impact approval of the application. So it was still problematic, especially coming from a country that claims to be an example of free speech rights and freedom of expression. A coalition of civil rights groups, including the ACLU, Access Now, and Demand Progress, wrote a letter last August opposing the DHS proposal to collect social media information. They wrote, "A person's online identifiers are gateways into an enormous amount of their online expression and associations, which can reflect highly sensitive information about that person's opinions, beliefs, identity, and community." The groups added that scrutiny of their sensitive or controversial online profiles, this speaks to you, Sam Knight One, would lead many visa waiver applicants to self-censor or delete their accounts with consequences for personal, business, and travel-related activity.
I will never log off.
Never logging off. It would also have consequences for global free speech considerations. I mean, this would also include U.S. citizens if other foreign countries decided they'd retaliate with similar screening on their foreign travelers, then all of a sudden, Sam, you won't be allowed to go to Turkey.
Yeah, I would hate to go to England and be turned around after like a 6-hour flight and spending a lot of money. Because I once told David Cameron he sucked a dead pig's dick on Twitter.
Isn't it true though?
Yeah, but you know.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're heading down that road. On a related note, in our latest installment.
I think it's true.
Moving on. In our latest installment of how the President of the United States is morphing into an authoritarian right before our very eyes, check out what Trump did today while meeting with sheriffs from around the country. Here was the Rockwall County Sheriff in Texas complaining to Trump about a pesky state lawmaker that didn't want police to be able to seize people's property without a conviction. You know, the whole due process thing. Completely reasonable, but not to this sheriff and not to Trump. Here was their exchange.
Asset forfeiture, we got a state senator in Texas that was talking about introducing legislation to require conviction before we could receive that forfeiture money.
Can you believe that?
And I told him that the cartel would build a monument to him in Mexico if he could get that legislation.
Where's the state senator? Do you want to give his name? We'll destroy his career.
We'll destroy this man's life.
Yeah, for making sure that cops just can't take the shit of whoever they accuse.
I know. How dare he demand that someone actually be convicted of a crime before the cops take said shit. Not in Trump's America. We will not stand for that.
Man, fuck that shit. I hope that sheriff gets some fucking barbecue sauce in his eye and like can't work for a while. Or has to retire because of eye-related barbecue sauce injuries.
To be clear, we're stating that while he's eating his own barbecue, he accidentally gets barbecue in his eyes.
Yes.
By the way, here...
I have a feeling that's our best hope for taking down half the Trump administration.
It's like when George W. Bush almost choked to death on a peanut.
Pretzel.
Oh, it was a pretzel.
Yeah.
Here is something that is happening in Trump's America, though. New restrictions on FOIA requests. News broke yesterday on Twitter from journalist Michael Best that the FBI would no longer be accepting FOIA requests emailed to them. Instead, you'd have to work through a new portal system that they set up or use paper mail, which, by the way, we can dig into this another day. But a new GAO report has bad news for the post office, grim situation for an institution that's just getting strangled by poison pills passed a decade ago by Congress. But that's for another day. When we get into some more GAO stories. But back to the FOIA situation at the FBI. Prolific FOIA Ing organization Muckrock analyzed this new FOIA portal and quickly found that it sucks, and that instead of just making everyone's life easier, it restricts the rights of FOIA requesters. First, it wasn't open 24/7, and it limited people to only one request a day. Also, it required that you have to tell the FBI if you're filing from inside or outside the U.S., which shouldn't be required under the law. Requests can't be any longer than 3,000 characters. Also, individuals weren't allowed to apply for media fee status, only organizations, which hurts independent journalists. Now, nice to report that after Muckrock published this, the FBI responded by stating it will open up the portal 24/7, and it will not limit people to just one FOIA request per day. Some of the other concerns, though, they still will linger. Okay, let's turn now to some economic news. Sam Knight, what do you got?
Well, we noted on yesterday's show that Trump's executive order rolling back Dodd-Frank would put $100 billion from bank reserves into the hands of Wall Street shareholders and managers at just the 6 largest financial firms in the country. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. On Tuesday, the journal noted that the Trump administration should run into substantial administrative difficulty, fortunately, if it only attempts to lean on the executive branch to repeal Dodd-Frank. The SEC doesn't have the authority to revoke Dodd-Frank, which is an act of Congress, the paper noted, and nearly 80% of rules under the law are already implemented. The journal said the SEC can, quote, offer relief by amending its rules or granting exemptions, but it also noted that the process is subject to judicial review. In other words, efforts to roll back Dodd-Frank rules through the SEC alone will be bogged down in the courts. Republican SEC commissioners are already trying, though, bless their black hearts. Yesterday, acting SEC head Michael Piwawar opened a review of a Dodd-Frank rule forcing companies to disclose the ratio of pay between the CEO and the median employee. Last Friday, Congress sent a bill to the president's desk repealing another Dodd-Frank rule, one forcing companies to disclose payments made to foreign companies for access to natural resources. That, by the way, had been gutted by federal courts and was never enforced or even meaningfully defended by the Obama administration, despite some very good posts I saw about this vote being related to former Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson. Although it certainly didn't help for optics that the mineral payments disclosure rule was repealed the same day that Tillerson was confirmed.
No, not at all.
Anyway, in other news, House Oversight Committee Chair Jason Chaffetz met with President Trump on Tuesday afternoon. The Benghazi co-investigator told journalists beforehand that he was, quote, not sure why the meeting was being held. Chaffetz noted that he is interested in finding out the opinion of the General Services Administration, the federal agency that owns the Pennsylvania Avenue building where Trump Hotel in D.C. is located. He said on Tuesday morning, according to Politico, quote, his being both the landlord and the tenant is something we're curious as to what the GSA opinion of that is. The House Oversight Chair also noted he has now received the unredacted version of the GSA's contract with Trump, but it doesn't yet clarify questions that Chaffetz has about the agreement. There is a clause in the deal forbidding an elected official from being party to the lease. After the meeting, the Wall Street Journal's Byron Tao noted a spokesperson said the pair had discussed, quote, Chairman Chaffetz's reform agenda. Tao also tweeted, quote, White House cancels joint photo op with at Jason in the House and at POTUS in the Oval. No explanation given.
I can take a few guesses.
Any care to offer one of your guesses?
I mean, just being curious about the hotel situation.
Yeah, that's a good guess. Finally, three of the remaining seven people charged with helping Ayman Bundy take over federal land have pleaded guilty, avoiding a trial. Sean and Sandy Anderson and Dylan Anderson, no relation between Dylan and Sean and Sandy, though Sean and Sandy are married. Anyway, Sean and Sandy Anderson and Dylan Anderson, no relation, all agreed to plead guilty to misdemeanor trespassing charges. Felony conspiracy and weapons charges against the three were dismissed in exchange for their plea. Federal Judge Anna Brown sentenced them to a year of probation and a fine of $1,000 paid to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. They must also ask probation officers for permission to camp on public lands owned. Doesn't that suck? If your friends were like, "Hey, want to go on a camping trip? There's a great national park, and I I'd like to, but I have to ask my probation officer because I was a fucking weirdo and occupied a federal wildlife refuge."
Yeah, it reminds me when I was a teenager and tried to camp in Missouri, and they had like a only 21 and up were allowed to camp. And
was it a nudie camp?
No, it wasn't, but, you still had to ask permission, I guess, if you were under 21, to ask permission from the state to camp.
That's weird.
The show me state.
By the way, Sean, Sandy Anderson, and Dylan Anderson were also ordered.
Not related.
They were also ordered to avoid Malheur Ridge, the site of the Bundy Boys' occupation early last year. After federal agents broke up the occupation in a shootout that killed one of the militants, federal prosecutors secured indictments against 26 people on conspiracy and weapons charges. 11 pleaded guilty last year. Charges were dropped against one man, but the Bundy brothers and five others were acquitted of felony charges last fall. Utah NBC affiliate KSL noted that after this failure, federal prosecutors altered their strategy, quote, by adding misdemeanor charges such as trespassing to the mix.
All right, before we go, a bit of news was made on Capitol Hill in the form of a member of Congress melting down on live TV. It was Republican Congressman Sean Duffy from Wisconsin, a guy who was on both MTV's The Real World and MTV's Road Rules back in the 1990s. For our younger audience, Road Rules was just like Real World, except instead of throwing a bunch of idiots and alcohol into a mansion, they threw them into an RV and had them drive all around the country.
So Duffy is pretty experienced for the job of being a United States congressman.
Yes, an ideal match. Anyway,
take that, you Congress clown.
Anyway, Duffy had a meltdown when he was challenged on CNN about the threat of white nationalist terrorism compared to extremist Islamic terrorism. To Duffy, homegrown terrorism by white guys is unfathomable. It just doesn't happen, and he's just so damn sure of it. Here's part of the exchange.
Why isn't the president talking about the white terrorist who mowed down six Muslims who were praying at their mosque?
Yeah, I don't know. But I would just tell you, there is a difference. Death and murder on both sides is wrong. But if you want to take the dozens of scenarios where ISIS-inspired attacks have taken innocents, and you give me one example of what's happened, I think that was in Canada. That was a one-off. That was a one-off, Allison.
Hold on.
And you have a
second.
Movement on the other
Hold
side.
Hold on a second, Congressman.
Bring it on, Allison.
Okay. Bring it on, Al. That's how cocky he is
what
on this
a
really
frat
stupid
boy prick.
On this stupid position he's about to stake out. All right, here's let's just commence the owning.
Sounds like he's like a fucking drunk frat boy standing behind a beer pong being like, well, actually, Irish people were slaves too.
Come on, Allison. Come on, Allison. Referring to CNN's Allison Camerota. Okay, let's start with the owning.
You don't think there are white extremists? You don't remember Oklahoma City? You don't think that this guy who was involved in the mosque shooting said that he was inspired by things that he read online?
So you give me two examples, right? And in recent
there's
time,
more coming,
we're talking
buddy.
About the one example, and there is radicals all over the world and here in America now that'll take up arms and do bad things. But if you want to compare this one person in the last 10 years that you can give me an example of, Oklahoma was what 20 years ago, the Oklahoma City bombing. That's different than this whole movement that's taken place through ISIS that's inspired attacks. I mean, are you going to compare the one attack up in Canada to all the death and destruction in Europe from refugees
or
the attacks in
the
United States of America?
How about the Charleston church shooting?
But here's what
he
you're
was an
doing.
Extremist. So, yeah. He was a white extremist.
Yeah, he was. Okay.
How about that? That doesn't matter?
No, it does matter. It does matter. Look at the good things that came from it. And Nikki Haley took down the Confederate flag. That was great.
No, there was no good things.
Why didn't she take it down
this.
Before? Did how many more people have to die for Confederate flags to come down?
Like his response to getting owned about is look at all the good things that came out of it, so it doesn't count. Okay, so now that Duffy here has been completely owned, what are you looking at over there?
Sorry, I was just looking something up.
Now that Duffy has been completely owned, let's commence stage three, which is him melting down in the whole I'm not mad, I'm getting really mad rant that just goes completely off the rails.
You want to say I can give you a couple examples. Mm-hmm. There's no constant thread that goes through these attacks. And you have radical Islamic terrorists and ISIS that are driving the attacks. And if you want to compare those two, maybe you can throw another one. I mean, look at Gabby Giffords. Look at Gabby Giffords, yeah. the Marxist who took her life.
What?
A leftist guy.
What?
And now you see violence and terror in the streets all across America, burning and beating people with Donald Trump hats. The violence you have to look at.
When did Jared Lee Lochner come out as a Marxist?
The left has to say, violence is wrong, whether we look and if
it's just completely off the rails at this point.
San Bernardino, why do we look
keep in mind he's been he's being asked about white extremists and here he is leftist
Donald Trump hat, make America great again hat again. Well, they get kicked and stores get vandalized and they burn and they beat. Where does the left
I wonder,
and CNN and MSNBC stand up and go, you know what, this is wrong.
Maybe it's
if
because
peace in our hearts,
you officials aren't condemning white supremacists when you're being fucking ass.
And to be clear, even if Chaffetz's premise is right that
Duffy.
Yeah, sorry, Duffy's premise is right that like there are these white liberals wreaking havoc on the streets. That proves the original point that there should be concern about white homegrown terrorism. Of course, you know, the threat of liberals and, you know, protesting at a Milo event is insignificant, but
won't
still
someone think of the Starbucks?
That whole exchange got out of hand pretty fast, but I keep going back to his writing off the Charleston massacre as, look at all the good things that came out of it, Allison. I mean, I know that it's only Tuesday here.
Wait,
but
let me stop you right there.
Yep, I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I think we need to do this.
I don't think I'm going to hear anything more awful than this week. I mean, our president probably will say something more, sure, but I'm just itching to do this.
Yeah, it's got to happen. I mean, we're going to do it again on the Sentinel cast on Friday.
Yes, I think Sean Duffy, though, right now just has to be thrown in the garbage can for what he did today. It just has to happen. Are you with me on this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean Duffy, you are going in the garbage can.
Surprise, bitch.
Oh, there it is. The complete collection of Road Rules on MTV 1994 to 2000.
There goes all those memos about right-wing extremist attacks that Duffy threw out. According to New America, Islamists launched 9 attacks that murdered 45, while the right-wing extremists struck 18 times, leaving 48 dead. That's according to a report that came out in February 2016. Looks like Sean Duffy has thrown all of that out. But I don't know. There's no white supremacist literature in his garbage can. Maybe he's saving that.
You melted down and then got thrown in the garbage can then later that day.
We fucking crushed you into a cube. We're putting it in a dumpster. A fucking truck is going to come pick it up and dump it in a landfill.
All right. That's enough. That's the show today. We jumped the gun on the garbage can, but don't worry. We'll throw someone new in the garbage can on Friday, Sentinel Cast. Available for Patreon subscribers only. Head over there now. It's patreon.com/districtsentinel. You can also make a $50 monthly contribution to become a sponsor of the show. Speaking of which, check out Congressional Dish podcast hosted by Jennifer Briney. Be informed about what Congress is working on this month by checking out congressionaldish.com. Listeners, if you want to call into the show and leave a message,
including Elliot Abrams, you lanyard fucking weasel.
Yes, including you, Elliot. Call our rant line. The number is 202-684-6108. That's 202-684-6108. Once again, you can read all of our stories and listen to this episode and all of our other podcast episodes of our nightly newscast by going to districtsentinel.com. If you haven't yet, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Rate us, review us. No, really, rate us and review us on iTunes. It helps. You'll hear from us tomorrow. We're in DC, so you don't have to be.